The Oracle Network. Look deeper.
Welcome to Brew Crime. I'm Mike.
I'm Beck.
I'm Nina.
And we've got a guest with us today.
I am Jamie McDonald, also known as Chatalus and MD.
Perfect. So today we're going to be doing a two-part episode. The first part, or the two parts are, it's metal crimes, but part one is heavy metal crimes. So me and Jamie are going to be covering that. And then part two will be Beck and Nina.
Now, when you say heavy metal, you mean Norwegian black metal,
something like metal. That, right? Yeah, and some Middle Eastern metal on my end.
Oh, nice! I'm stoked. Are you gonna go first, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet.
So the beer that I've paired with this is from Fuggles and Warlock Craftworks. It is their Dragoon Imperial Stout with rum and raisins. But it's more because of the logo, which I'll have a picture on the website. It looks really, really metal. It's got like a dragon head with lightning bolts coming out of it and devil horns on it. It looks pretty cool.
Said I doubt it tastes good though. Rum and raisins.
Oh, and yeah, it's got.
Sounds like Christmas.
Yeah, sounds like baking.
It says this rich ale boasts caramel and roasted malts with spiced hops. A decadent profile begins with chocolate and coffee before elevating to rum soaked raisins, vanilla, and French oak. So yeah, really, really roasty nose. Coffee and chocolate, maybe a hint of some rum in it. It's definitely like tons of caramel and roast and chocolate, some coffee in there. It's not super sweet. It's a little on the drier side. It's got the rum. It's got, I don't know if you can really say it tastes like raisins, but yeah, it's nice. Although I'd like a little more sweetness. All right, so I've titled my story Slaying in Iran because, you know, metal, it's all about slaying the guitar and stuff. So in the Western world, we take for granted the fact that we have freedoms to do many things. One of those things is make music, like metal, and maybe even throw in some satanic lyrics. Now say it ain't so, right? Oh no, some satanic lyrics. So this is absolutely not permitted in some Muslim countries. Strict religious law make even the production of metal music illegal. This is a quote here. I remember when I was only 14 years old, I had this Scorpions t-shirt on and was hanging in the local park. The cops stopped me and didn't let me go until I sent my friend to ask my dad to come bring me another shirt so the cops could rip the Scorpions one up. Crazy, huh? It's also, we need some more periods in that quote. So this was just a metalhead that wanted to remain anonymous. I wonder why, right? It's another one. The fear of getting in trouble was constant here. It was an adrenaline rush, and for us, part of being a metalhead was also being a rebel. In Iran, blasphemy against Muhammad is a death sentence. Well, if you blaspheme against God, you're able to be forgiven by God. So Western music in general is highly illegal in Iran. It's not just metal, but Western music in general. It's just crazy. For music to be legal in Iran, it must be licensed by the state. More so, women are not allowed to publish their own voices ever since the Islamic Revolution.
Not a lot of room for creativity there, then.
No.
Does that mean that there would be like a large catalog of music before the 70s then, before the revolution?
Sounds like, yeah, because the laws were very, very different back then, right?
That's pretty cool. I like that.
I hate how like it got worse in the 70s. Usually things like get better as we, you know, get older.
Yeah.
But nope, not there.
To even find metal music back in the day was almost impossible as it was only... With the advent of the internet, it was able to spread with more people in the country. So, you know, downloads and everything. The state does all it can to limit its spread, censoring the internet and social media, but it still finds a way to come into the country. The main way it spreads is via digital downloads, but there have even been small record stores that pop up selling illegal CDs. It is not possible to order music into the country, and PayPal is expressly banned. It's like they're trying really hard to hide this stuff. Things got really rigid in Iran in 1989 when once president of Iran became supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. we'll say. He controls the judiciary, the media, and the military.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
The thing is, no matter how rigid a regime is, people will rebel. Metal musicians are often known to be extreme, and these guys that I will mention now fit that bill. Fighting for the rights to perform music that is not only illegal, but could get you executed under the wrong circumstances is just nuts. But good for them. The first band I want to talk about is Arsimus. Arsimus was founded back in 2002 in Masad, Iran. They are a death metal band. In 2005, they recorded and released their first single called Adiforsi that was recorded in their home studio as there was really no other option. They would release their first EP, Cyclopia, in 2006. They would be interviewed in a documentary made in Malaysia called I'm a Muslim Too that focused on the youth in the Middle East. The other places in the Middle East are a little more open to metal music, and the band was able to play in 2010 in Dubai at Metal Asylum. So here's a sample of their music.
That was badass. That was dope.
Like, if you're into death metal, they sound pretty darn good. It's not my favorite style, dope. But they sound pretty good.
Yeah, man, that was awesome.
So, quote from the band, our music is about our past, culture, and history. That they think that when we growl and play fast music, we are into Satanism. The skulls on our t-shirt mean the same for them as satanic musicians. Unfortunately for the band, things went bad in 2017. The band was in their rehearsal space, working on music, when the police burst in and arrested the band on charges of Satanism that have a 15-year prison sentence if found guilty. Yeah.
Years.
The band was then moved to jail, where they were kept for a week before any of their family were notified where they were. Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm sure that might just be normal practice, though, there.
It could be, yeah, I don't know.
So terrifying. Holy fuck.
So scary.
The family didn't even know that they had been arrested. Right around the 1 month mark in prison, they finally had the opportunity to have bail paid and they got out of prison. It's like 1 month, nothing. Conditions of the release, though, were that their social media and website were banned and they were not allowed to sell any of their merch or music until the final court date. They finally got a new social media account up and running 1 year later. So move forward to 2020, the band would get a call from the courts, and the band was sentenced to 15 years in prison. The band fled from Iran, and as of the writing of this script at the end of January 2021, the band still has not admitted to where they are hiding.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of hiding. So yeah. Obviously they're
gonna well, do it. Other bands have fled, and once they're
out...
I'm
not shocked by that update, Mike.
Quote from the band, "It is a crime that we are playing metal music?" Question mark. They said, "It is a crime that we are talking about Persian history. It is a crime that you think we're into Satanism when we have songs about Cyrus the Great and monotheism. It is a crime that we love music and our country." But Arsimus is not the first band to be arrested in Iran. They're not even into Satanism at all. These are actually Muslim guys that are just playing metal music.
Just regular dudes, right?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Now let's talk about the band Confess. The band was formed in Tehran in 2010 and is a nu metal and thrash band that took inspiration from bands that many people will recognize, like Lamb of God, Slayer, Devil Driver, and Slipknot. You probably have heard of them, Jamie.
Yeah, of course. I think all of us have heard of those.
Yeah. So here's a sample of their music. So there is Confess.
That was dope. Yeah. Say what you say, I am insane.
Yeah.
That was the last line he said.
I wish I could play a little bit longer sample, but that's about as much as we can play.
Yeah, I get it. There's some fellas in Spotify won't like that very much. Yeah.
The band was originally just two men, Nikin and Arash. And in 2015, the two were arrested by 10 members of the army of the Guardians of the Islamic Revolution that burst into their Tehran home. Nikan's crime was playing heavy metal, while Arash's was blasphemy and for playing music that spoke out against the Islamic Republic of Iran and the National Supreme Leader.
Shameful.
Yeah. You would be right in expecting this to be really serious in this country. The two men faced the possibility of execution for their crimes, and they were held in solitary confinement.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What's more metal than that, man? That's like so metal.
Dude. The warden would fuck with them, opening their cell doors and saying they were being taken for execution, and then come back in under an hour and say, not tonight.
Whoa. What? Why would they do that?
Because these are terrible people that play metal music and are Satanists.
Oh my God. That's fucked up. That is so fucked up.
Do they get a last meal? Because that means every time that happened, they do got a bomb-ass meal, right?
No idea.
I doubt the Western concept of last meals exists
in Persia. They would be levied six-year sentences for their crimes with no execution, but this charge would be appealed. While the two were out of prison, they had a travel ban. They would find a way to flee the country, though, and end up in Norway, where they would apply for asylum and be granted. So while they fled the country already in 2019, the new charges would be laid, and the penalties would be 14 and a half years in prison and 74 lashes.
74, which, by the way, 7 lashes is pretty bad, but 21 is like almost fatal. So 74 lashes is like pretty insane. That's a ridiculous sentence.
Couldn't you just die from bleeding out at that point?
Yeah, yep. Like it just tears so much flesh away. You pass out before 20. There wouldn't even be. Yeah.
It hurts to take a Band-Aid off quickly. I couldn't imagine getting that.
You know what? It's on par with taking a Band-Aid off. It's exactly.
But
worse. But 74 of them.
74 Band-Aids on hair. Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe everyone except Mike here has had a tattoo. Taking off the fucking tape is the worst.
It's safe to say these two will not be heading back to Iran anytime soon, but the band has increased their membership with a few guys from Norway. Now, there are a few legal ways to be a metal band in Iran, but this does not mean you are safe. The band Dawn of Rage would find this out.
Videos have the lyrics because you just have no idea what they're screaming at you.
I don't know why they do that. I don't think most don't know, but it seems to be a lot of the Middle Eastern ones that I was finding did have the lyrics.
I honestly have no idea what a single word is that they're saying, so I'm just reading the lyrics and just being like, yeah, I'm angry too.
I'm pressing the Zoom raise hand.
Yeah.
I think it's because lyric videos are so cheap to make versus like an actual video. And like the idea of them actually shooting a video in this place, they're not even allowed to play the music, is probably like so not, you know, this is not possible at all.
Yeah. Could be
like that.
Well, if it's even their video, right? Could just be a video that some fan made.
Yeah. That could be like just snuff footage that they just stole or something.
I'm pretty sure that was off their official YouTube, but.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Official.
Saying it's possible.
Yeah,
true.
It is possible.
So
far, I like the first one you played best.
Okay. I think I like the second one best, but yeah. Dawn of Rage is a groove or progressive metal band from Iran that formed around 2010. In August 2013, the band was playing a concert in Iran that was licensed and sanctioned by the government of Tehran. Even with the approvals, the concert that took place at the Tehran Conservatory was raided by undercover police in white vans with no license plates. The band and all 220 concertgoers were arrested on the spot.
What's the point of the permits then? Or approval or whatever the fuck?
Yeah.
Seems very arbitrary.
It does, yeah.
It's entrapment.
Yes. The attendees would all be released from prison, including the one-third female crowd, after a short stay in prison, but they would have to post bail or leave collaterals like a driver's license, to make sure that they would come back when they were summoned.
Hmm.
Every single person in attendance was photographed, had their phones confiscated permanently, and they were all forced to strip naked so the police could look to find any satanic symbols on their bodies.
That's like witch trials.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
For the mark of the devil.
Other metal bands have tried to leave Iran before they ended up on the wrong end of the law just for trying to play the music they love, including Sina Winter and his band from the Vastland, who left for Norway as well. Luckily, none of these musicians ended up being executed or spending long times in jail, but man, does it take some guts to play music that you love just knowing that the next knock on the door could be the police coming to lock you up for over a decade or execute you.
That's if they knock.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they probably don't knock here.
Yeah. So I have massive respect for anyone that would show that kind of dedication to their passion, because I don't think I could do it.
They just got some major street cred for doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then 74 lashes.
Well, luckily they escaped the country, so they just got to make sure they never get arrested and sent back to Iran.
There must be somewhere they could go and apply for legal asylum.
Well, it looks like Norway's been saying yes to a couple bands. So Scandinavia is huge into heavy metal. So it's probably why they're allowing these people to do asylum there. And as long as they stay out of the Middle East, they're probably pretty safe. But yeah, that's my story.
Wow.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing, man.
No worries. I had never heard about this at all. And then I was doing some research for Metal Crimes and I'm like, holy shit. Wait, there's more? Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
Dude, the 71 lashes, though, like, seriously, like, the way that they do it is, like, it's just like the caning in Singapore.
Yeah.
Like, if people are like, how many cane? It's like, oh, they got sentenced to, like, 30 canings. It's like hits or something. And it's like, oh, you could take that. It's like, dude, you pass out after five.
You can take that. Yeah.
It's bad. Like, it's just, and you're scarred for life. Like,
they actually just had a public lashing. Fuck, let me find where it was. It made it onto YouTube. Two men, I think it was Indonesia, I might be wrong, were accused of having gay sex.
Jeez.
And they were publicly lashed, like within a couple weeks ago.
I saw that. I forget where it was as well.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's crazy that it's a thing. And like, I don't even get on the topic of what they were apparently doing wrong.
Yeah. It's not a fucking crime.
No, it's not. It's like, anywhere in Indonesia other than Bali is like pretty much heavily Islamic Muslim governed. So it's all Sharia law everywhere except Bali. So it's like they're Vegas, basically.
It was Indonesia, this one that happened January 28th.
Oh, geez. So recently, too.
A week ago-ish.
Wow. So as stated earlier, my name is Jamie, and I release music. I release instrumental music under the name Chatterless. And that music consists of a lot of lo-fi type hip hop and synthwave and piano instrumentals. It's just like a lot of instrumental music. And if you like that, just really easy listening, chill vibe, I'd recommend you go check it out. I have a new release coming out on February 19th. It's called Long Shadows on the Sand. It's another synthwave release from my my upcoming album called Nobody from Nowhere with Nothing.
Nice.
And I hope you guys check it out. It's super easy. I'm sure there'll be links in the description. Yes. I'll make sure that stuff will happen out there. But yeah, if you guys check it out, I'd really love it. And with that being said, let's get into the madness that is the band Mayhem.
Mayhem.
And this story I'm titling Hemmed In.
Perfect.
All right. My pairing this week, I think, is very fitting. It's called Mega Destroyer from How Sound Brewing. It's an Imperial Licorice Stout, which I have to admit, upon first viewing and reading of it, I immediately retched. I thought that would be gross. But I'm actually really into stouts, and this is super delicious. Now, I'm going to give you a heads up. It's 10%, so it's not for the faint of heart. And neither is the story we're about to tell here with Mayhem. It's pretty impressive, the fact that this pairs so well. But Mega Destroyer, it's pretty awesome. I think you guys should check it out. You'll love it. It's just as awesome as the name describes. Enjoy. So first thing you need to know is that this band is probably the most notorious band story that you've probably haven't heard. And if you have heard it, then you already know that this is like a wild situation.
Insane.
This is insane. So in 1984, this band was formed called Mayhem. It was heavily influenced by a band called Venom. And they actually named their band after the song by Venom called Mayhem with Mercy. The band Venom was really heavily into satanic imagery and lifestyle. But the fact of the matter is, they actually thought it was a lot more theatrical. And the people that were involved in Mayhem actually took it more serious than that. And by that, I mean way more serious.
Yes.
So what happened is, in a small town in Norway, the Norwegian black metal scene was founded by a gentleman named Euronymous. Now, they all have like real names and stuff like that, but they all have like their death metal names. So I'm going to use that throughout because it's easier to put it together. The band members originally were Necro Butcher, Hellhammer, Euronymous, and Dead. Now, Dead.
Dead.
Yes, that's, Dead.
Yeah.
That's not.
Sorry, Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
Just don't worry.
So originally this band was like a cover band, and what they did was they would play covers, and you know, I don't know if anyone knows what Norwegian black metal sounds like, but maybe actually Mike, can you cue this up for a sec? Maybe just let them know like what this sounds like.
And this is from the 80s and 90s. It sounds a little different now, but yeah.
Are you dead? Huh? Carnage!
Can't wait. Dude. Exactly. Okay, so we'll turn that up a bit and we'll let you guys know how that turns out.
And that was a live recording too.
Yeah, they were originally a cover band, but like that's hilarious too in itself that they'd be covering songs. But they put out a call for vocalists that because they wanted to try someone out. Necro Butcher, a member of the band, soon received a letter with a dead rat inside it from a guy who called himself Dead, and he wanted to be the new vocalist. Everyone decided that that was the most metal thing that could happen. So they immediately took him into the band. He moved from Sweden to Norway and he immediately joined the band. Dead was a little bit different though. Everyone was really into black metal and Satanism, but Dead took it to a whole new level. For instance, before live shows, Dead would like bury his clothes for 24 hours beforehand in the ground and then dig them up before the show and put them on because he wanted to feel dead, like that kind of stuff. He would bring bags of roadkill to the shows and inhale it before going on stage because he wanted the scent of death before they took the stage. Like really, really taking it to the next level. And the thing was, even though they were all members of the band, these four members, Euronymous and Dead would actually kind of like push each other and a lot to see who could go the farthest. Dead was also notoriously depressed, and he would often, you know, push other members of the band to try and kill him or even, you know, threatening at one point to kill himself in front of the band. And the band would just always kind of chalk it up to Dead being dead. And turns out in 1991, Dead did take his own life. He did so by slicing both of his wrists, and he actually shot himself with a shotgun in the face. His suicide letter said, "Excuse the blood, let the party begin." I can't even begin to say how wild that is for, yeah, like very tragic, but also just what the fuck, right?
Yeah.
Like just crazy.
Yeah.
So the first person to find Dead was Euronymous. And he drives to get a disposable camera to stage photos of Dead with his head blown off, which became the album artwork for Dawn of the Black Hearts, a very, very small circulated EP that Mayhem put out. It's a very bootleg. There's only a few copies out there, but you can Google the image, which is, you know, viewer discretion advised, obviously. Yeah. It's pretty wild. But what happened was, through folklore, Euronymous actually takes chips of Dead's skull and makes necklaces out of them for the members of the band that are still remaining. They said, "This is what's going to make us big." That's what Euronymous is quoted as saying. At this point, Necro Butcher says, "I can't deal with this. I'm out of here. Make sure you destroy those photos before you ever call me again." And he didn't, so he didn't call him. And that was that.
Right.
They ran into each other occasionally in the scene, but Necro Butcher left the band after that. So they're down a bass player and down a vocalist. So what they need to do is they need to get a new vocalist. So Euronymous recruits a guy named Attila Cesar, and they're still down a bass player. But that's okay, because Euronymous opens up a record shop, and underneath the record shop, he has a satanic temple where he founds the Black Circle. The Black Circle is the members of the band and just the closest members that they can possibly share their Satanism with. All members of the band pledge themselves to Satan and have them have every single aspect of their life dominated by darkness. It's pretty intense, honestly, to think about the fact that like there's a retail store upstairs and like downstairs they're like, you know, doing goat sacrifices and shit like that. That's yeah. pretty wild. So here we enter Varg. Varg was a rich kid who was a one-man band of the band called Burzum. Burzum was a black metal band as well, but he was heavily influenced by groups like the Scorpions and you know, other more, I'd say, lighter heavy metal. This this infuriated people like Euronymous, who called him a poser, and they kind of kept their distance for a while. Eventually, Varg, who is a white supremacist, by the way, he wants to join Mayhem, so he shops his one-man band, Burzum, to Euronymous, and Euronymous happens to love it, so they record an album together under Euronymous's label. Varg, formerly known as Christian, the Christian, along with Euronymous, began to have more and more disagreements concerning creativity and payments. For instance, Varg was like, hey, when do I get paid for the album we just put out? Euronymous would say things like, oh, it's coming, don't worry about it, it's coming, don't worry, you work for the label, we're going to recoup, don't worry. Varg decides to burn down a sacred Christian church in order to get a little bit more publicity for the album. After this, he begins fucking every single girl possible he seems, as more and more churches burn in tribute to what he did originally. It's really crazy how the scene just kind of flips upside down, just like everyone seems to just be for burning churches all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And Euronymous takes credit for this, saying, yes, I told him to do it. Euronymous honors Varg by making him the new honorary bass player of Mayhem. To celebrate, Varg and Euronymous go and burn down a church. Another church burns down. So at this point, several churches have burned, but these are like old churches. Like some of them are from the 1200s. Like yeah. it's like really like, it's not even just like if you're sentimental towards Christianity, it's like just architecture and
beautiful, beautiful old churches. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, wow, like burning down these sacred places. So this goes on and the notoriety starts building around Mayhem, who refuse to play shows because shows are for posers and tours are for posers, which I think is hilarious because okay. they're the founders of Norwegian black metal. And it's just, it seems like nowadays, like such a meme or a cliche, but it's like, oh, do you like it? Yes. Then I hate it. Like, that's like the so black metal. I just yeah. love that so much. So the drummer of Mayhem decides that he wants to know what it's like to kill a man. So he poses as a homosexual in a bar, trolling and cruising for gay sex in order to feel what it's like to stab someone. He ends up killing a man in a park in Lillehammer and stabs him several times to death. He informs the members of the Black Circle, and they celebrate by burning down a Christian church. Police are just baffled by what's happening, but they know it's starting to be connected to these dark metal, black metal scenes. At a Motorhead concert, the Black Circle discusses the member, the drummer of the band killing the man, and they now have to lay low. So Euronymous decides to move forward with Mayhem and record a debut album. Varg and Euronymous continue to have tension based on who's a real black metal representative. Varg wants to blow up the oldest church in Norway from the 1100s. Euronymous says, this might be going too far. I don't know if this is like something we need to do. Varg starts to say that Euronymous is the poser himself. He's not actually dedicated to Satan, and it just talks the talk. Euronymous says, it doesn't have to be like this, man. We're going to blow up. We're going to have a big debut of our album. This is going to be a big, big thing. We need to go on tour. And Varg says, I thought you said only posers go on tour. So you start to see the split between them in terms of their ideology.
Yeah.
So Varg intends to go to the press and explain the attacks. Because what happens is the oldest church in Norway does get blown up. And Euronymous takes credit after he starts getting press calls saying, yes, I told him to do it. I told Varg to do it because he works for me on my label, in my band. I'm the founder of Norwegian black metal. And Varg now goes to the press and explains the attacks, but he confesses everything in accident, but in a vain manner to the press reporter. So the press reporter is like, you're the person behind the attacks? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, so you're admitting all this? And he goes, well, no. I mean, I just know the people. But I mean, yeah, I know who did it. He's like, you. And he goes, yeah, I guess you could say I did it. Like that kind of stuff. Like he just didn't really.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just kind of dumb. Like he didn't really know what he was saying. He officially says, I'm bigger than Mayhem, so I'm leaving Mayhem. Varg leaves Mayhem. And there's a period of time where Euronymous is actually starting to get his life into like a normal way of growing up, essentially. And he's like, he has a girlfriend. There's like just regular days where, you know, the shop is running, but there's too many police and there's too many people trying to contact him about the band. So he decides to close up the record store in an effort to mend bridges with Varg. Euronymous says, okay, look, I'll give you your masters back to your band Burzum. And I just want you to know that we're cool and everything's fine. Meanwhile, when Varg originally left Mayhem, Euronymous was so mad that he was telling everyone that he's like, I'm going to tase him with this taser, tie him up and torture him to death and film the whole thing and release it. And that's what I'm going to do to promote the album. I hate this fucking guy. Like he used to just torture and bully. Like he was really building it up. Like he was going to do this to Varg. Word gets back to Varg and Varg gets this letter in the mail saying, hey, just sign this contract, my friend, and you can have your masters back. Varg snaps and decides to murder Euronymous before he can murder him. On his way to murder him, the driver he took with him stops for gas and they pay with Varg's stolen credit card. This is how smart they are. They claim that they are both watching
an episode of Forensic Files. Like,
wasn't a thing yet.
30 red flags of how you're going to get caught.
Yeah. Like, that's straight up.
And it's just them.
Yeah, this is why I included this part, because I know you'll love this. They claim that they're both watching Die Hard 2 when the murder had occurred. Because he said, have you watched this before? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, okay, cool. This is what we were watching tonight, if anyone asks. So he shows up.
Good alibi.
Yeah. Varg shows up at the door of Euronymous, and Euronymous says, what are you doing here? Because he had to drive like 500 miles just to get there. So he says, what are you doing here? He says, I'm here to deliver the contract. And he goes, okay. And he hands over the contract. He goes, okay, well, I got to sign it too. So let me sign it. And as he goes to get a pen, Varg stabs him. And Euronymous is like, what are you doing? And he goes, stabs him again. And then Varg reportedly makes chocolate milk. Now, this was depicted in the film Lords of Chaos. So I don't know how accurate this is, but the only surviving member of the attack said that apparently this happened. So he stabbed him. And while Euronymous was on the ground bleeding and trying to get his way out of the locked door, we have Varg making what is essentially like chocolate quick with milk and powder and just drinking it while his former friend is bleeding on the floor, bleeding out. He then goes over to finish the job. And this murder is done by a vicious and repetitive stabbing down several flights of stairs from the apartment building that Euronymous lived in. At the end of the attack, over 23 stab wounds were actually recorded. 2 to the head, 5 to the neck, and 16 to the back. In fact, the final blow was so hard that the knife actually stuck in the skull and was unable to be removed initially from the crime scene. However, that's been disputed by forensic science and saying that couldn't have happened based on the reports that were given by the coroner. So you'd have to kind of read between the lines between that one. I don't know what happened, but it seems like this was pretty rough.
Yeah.
That being said, over 23 stab wounds. And they said that in his defense, Varg unsuccessfully argued that this was self-defense. So 23 stab wounds and self-defense and no other injuries to Varg.
Yes, but 16 in the back doesn't lead me to believe self-defense.
No, it doesn't. Not
at all, right? So he ended up being arrested and going to jail. Varg was charged with murder, arson, theft, inciting racial hatred. He actually did 21 years in prison, and he had 6 months probation with an 8,000-pound fine. He's actually free. He's a free man. He's 47 years old. He lives in Bergen, Norway right now. He believes in something called Odalism, which is kind of like a combination of Odinism and anything that's a threat to a pre-industrial European pagan society. So he hates Christianity, hates Islam, hates Judaism, hates capitalism, hates materialism.
And he just hates himself.
Yeah, like
yeah, and he's a hardcore white supremacist too. Yeah,
yeah, he's a hardcore white supremacist. Like would often hang Nazi flags in his domicile, things like that. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. The murder of Euronymous was pretty significant because not only was he murdered, but the album that they all recorded to make the debut, which was called De Mysterious Dom Samothanus, this album actually features bass playing from Varg and guitar playing from Euronymous. So you have an album where the bass player murdered the guitar player, and you have a drummer who murdered a stranger, and you have the original lead singer who committed suicide and was the cover art for their EP. Like, that is one of the darkest stories I think I've ever come across ever in music. It's really, really insane. And there's a film that depicts all this. I watched it. It's pretty troubling at times. I'll give you guys a heads up, but Lords of Chaos is what it's called. And I got to give a big shout out to Mike for putting me onto that. It was pretty tough to find it, but once I did, it was really worth it. But yeah, all that being said, the band is still active right now. They divorced themselves from all of the controversy that happened prior to 1994.
What does that mean?
Well, they essentially said the original guy who said he didn't want to have anything to do with the necklaces that were made of the skull from Dead, his name was Necro Butcher. Him and Hellhammer decided that they were going to restart Mayhem. And they're going to recruit Attila, who is the replacement for Dead, as the vocalist. And now they have a couple of new members named Taylock and Ghoul. And these people are going to essentially start a new Mayhem. And they've been active since 1994 until now. They're still releasing music. And they have quite a large following whenever large tours are announced or festivals and they get booked. So they are one of the founders of Norwegian black metal, and they're highly controversial. They have notorious live performances. It's a spectacle to be a part of and an experience to behold. That's what I got to say about that.
Yeah, and I've seen some videos of their performances over the years, and they've got, like, I assume are fake, like, pig heads and stuff on spikes, and yeah, it looks crazy.
Yeah, yeah, they started the whole, like, cut yourself on stage and bleed and have like, and just things that like shock rockers we have now, like that would have been doing in the last 20 years. They started back in like the 80s,
early essentially. 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm really stoked that I got to cover this, but I just wanted you guys to know all those details, and thanks for letting me share, the band Mayhem.
And I would just say that I actually was able to find the Lords of Chaos on the Google Play Store. So
yeah, actually, yeah, that's right. I think that's where I got mine from. That or R from the High Seas, maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see.
But yeah, what is it? It says here, like, if you want to buy it, it's currently $10 on Google Play Store. So it is out there. Might be hard to find a physical copy of it these days, but you can definitely.
I just can't believe that they just decided that they're going to divorce themselves from their past, and that they still have, like, I think with the current like cancel culture, which we talked about, like,
yeah,
before starting today, like, I'm surprised that that's flying with people, or people are still like supporting, giving money. Cause I'm just thinking any of their old songs potentially for the guys who are left alive anyway, would probably have royalties. Right.
Well, they only had one EP that was released before all this happened. And then there's the one album that was recorded with those guys, and everything else has been done with just the two surviving band members that weren't criminals. Well, that we know of weren't criminals, and then other members. So there is probably zero royalties from these old guys.
But they didn't even change their name or anything, right?
Oh God, like, no, nope.
No. In fact, the member we mentioned earlier, Necro Butcher, who was the original bass player, who decided to leave the band after the suicide of Dead. He was so against everything that he left the band completely, but then had rights to essentially come back and recruit Hellhammer. And that's why they started off the way they did. So Yeah, it is pretty weird. I mean, I told Mike right away, I was like, it is kind of weird that they divorced themselves from all that and like they've managed to get away from it and not have any problems. But I think maybe it's more what you expect of a genre. For instance, like someone like R. Kelly, you don't expect them to be that predatory. You don't expect them to be that crazy. And so that was like more of a scandal and more awful, obviously. But then like when you think of Black Norwegian death metal, you're like, well, yeah, I kind of think it's going to be like blood and murder and all this crazy shit. So
it just usually isn't. You know what
I mean? Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So like that's.
You still have like where R. Kelly, he is his brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Where you have really a band. Yeah. You know, like it's Chris Brown too, right? Like he is his brand. So I don't know, maybe that's the difference, but it's funny. So when you say like death and heavy metal, I think of, like live performances.
Yeah.
Think of Eurovision in Finland when they had Lordi do theirs. And that's where my mind goes, just showing how potentially sheltered I am to death metal. It was such a fun band. They won Eurovision.
The one thing I think is interesting too is that Lords of Chaos, the movie, was directed by, this is probably the wrong pronunciation, but Jonas Åkerlund.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a member of Swedish's black metal band Bathory, but he's also a director. So someone from the Swedish black metal history made this film. So he was actually in that band from 83 to 84. Not a long time, but he was in black metal and now he's a film director. And he made that movie and it's got, is it Rory Culkin? Macaulay Culkin's brother?
Rory, right?
Yeah.
I got to say, he killed it as Euronymous. He looked really, really good. It was the one thing I really loved about the whole film was that at the end, and Mike and I, we discussed this earlier before we started the show, but the fact that the existing members of the band were like, yeah, this is hard to watch because it brings back bad memories, but this was so accurate. Like it was very, they basically nailed the costumes and everything.
They nailed the costumes, they nailed the locations and all that kind of stuff. They didn't nail all of the background story, but I mean, it's a movie. They've got to play with a little bit. But they nailed a lot of it still, which was impressive.
Yeah. And just a heads up, all the parts that we discussed that you're like, oh, that it's a movie. They won't show that or anything. They show everything. And it's sometimes it's just like an extended cut. And you're just like, I can't believe how long this is going on. Like, it's pretty wild. Yeah.
But it's amazing to me that they could separate themselves from the like negative press that they would have got, but have all the notoriety, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they maintained all the, for lack of a better term, street cred without any of the negative press. And it's just like, when does that ever happen?
Yeah.
Well, that's white privilege. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, basically is. That's 1983, 1984 for you. Or no, it was 1994, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah. I think it's because like death metal
and black
like
metal,
specifically black metal, like Norwegian black metal is such a small subgenre, subsect of metal that like the reach isn't there.
Or it wasn't then. It is huge now in Europe.
Yeah. Now it's like this giant thing. But like at the time, I think it wasn't. And then there hasn't been enough of a generational gap yet for people to look back and be like, why is this band still a band? You know, it's pretty wild, but I don't know what to say. Like, I just know that it's some of the most reprehensible shit I've ever fucking come across ever.
Yeah.
Straight up. Well, that's it.
I think it helps that I forget his name. The guy that you said was like, this is crossing a line. I'm out of here. That he's the one that came back and like restarted it.
Yeah.
Because then he clearly knows where that line is and can toe that line as much as he wants without crossing it.
Was that Necro Butcher?
That was Necro Butcher, yes.
Yeah.
These names though, eh?
Yeah. Yep.
And his real name is probably like Carl.
His real name's like is like my name is Unskana Gresken. Like his name's some crazy Norwegian name. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because so Dimmu Borgir is from Norway as well. And their singer is his stage name is Sugarath. And I don't remember, it was probably a good 5-10 years ago, Norway did this most influential, like 100 most influential people since Confederation of Norway. And he was mentioned as one of the top 100 most influential people in Norway. As a black metal, now they didn't burn any churches or anything, but as a black metal musician, satanic themes all the time. Like their album covers are covered with pentagrams and Baphomet and everything. And that's what Norway can do.
Jesus.
Like that's, I'll just show you guys. Here's a picture of him on stage.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's one of their top 100 most influential people. Wouldn't happen in Canada.
Yeah, and just to give an explanation, because I know this is audio, just like basically they're covered in corpse paint.
Yeah,
and corpse paint. That's like the most identifiable aspect of black metal aesthetic. It's like you cover yourself in white paint with like a little bit of black. And I got to be honest, when I go for Halloween, I go in corpse paint almost, I'd say, 80% of the time.
Nice. So
it's pretty fun. I love it. It's pretty rad.
All righty. Well, I guess we can wrap this up then.
Okay.
So hopefully you've enjoyed this metal.
Yeah. I really appreciate you guys listening. Thank you.
All right. So thanks for tuning in. You can go to all of our social media at Brewcrime. You can go to brewcrime.com. If you want to email us at brewcrime@pacificbeerchat.com. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/brewcrime. Shout out to our Patreon supporters, True Crime Nana, Daniela, Nina's Mom, Three Biz In Podcast, Amber, and the faves of our lives.
Patreon.
The money goes to upgrade our equipment, make the show better, and you get one bonus episode per month. So, cheers, and part two will be the next episode. Peace.
Bye.
Before our outro and our outtakes, here is the latest upcoming track from Jamie from his group Chatterless. We hope you enjoy, and if you do, head to our website and you can find links to all of his stuff and you can buy his tracks and his albums. We hope you like it. Brewcrime's intro was created by Mike using Creative Commons Attribution Licensed Audio from purple-planet.com, soundbible.com, and freesoundeffects.com. Logo design was by Ben Greenberg. All cases and stories were written by Beck, Nina, and Mike, and our sources are put into the show notes for each episode. We always want to give credit to the people that research the cases we talk about. We can also be found on your favorite podcast apps, our hosts, Spreaker.com, or brewcrime.com. As well as at Brewcrime on Twitter, at Brewcrime on Facebook, at facebook.com/groups/brewcrime. Thanks for listening. This has been a production of Pacific Beer Chat.
Hello, this is Eric Carter Lundin, the host and producer of True Consequences, a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. We'll uncover cases such as the Toy Box Killer, one of the worst serial rapists and suspected serial killers in New Mexico's history. We will also discuss mysteries such as alien sightings, as well as hauntings and other weird things that happen in this area of the country. I hope you'll give me a chance and listen to True Consequences. I think you might enjoy it. You can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Put some sugar in it.
No.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, it doesn't sound good to me. I don't know.
Okay, you don't want to shit yourself today?
What? Just like, it's warm in here. I'm going to open the window. Sorry.
Yeah, I have the AC on right now.
I wish.
Yeah, this Mega Destroyer's got me just sweating.
What do you think? A-D-I-P-O-S-E-R-E.
A-D-I-P-O-S-E-R-E.
A diploid? A diploider?
A deforcer. Yeah.
I'll play you a song, Mike.
Sounds good.
Oh, the new ones, after the 94. Right?
I'm still not a fan.
No, because it's just like, and then it's like.
Yeah. And then.
Make sure you delete those, or delete them. Hilarious.
Sugar breath.
Sugar breath.
Work, Patreon.